Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm John Pierce, your host. Neil Heaver is our engineer. He's our operations director here at WDIY. We have a very special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse today. We're starting something that I hope is going to grow into something really important, and that is we're featuring teenagers. We have, in the first half hour, two students from William Allen High School who are going to be talking about clubs that they belong to. One is an anti-bullying club, and the other is a PPL Engineering Explorers Club. We're going to hear from them, and then in the second half hour, stay tuned for segment that we're calling Teen Scientists, and that is going to be hosted by Rhea Malhotra, who will be along in just about a half hour. Let's start off with William Allen High School, the first high school that we're featuring on our what we're calling High Schoolers on the Move. And our first high schooler on the move to speak with is Natalie Reyes, who is, what year, Natalie, at William Allen?
I am a senior, so a 12th grader.
And you're looking forward to doing what next year?
I'm looking forward to going to college for graphic design.
Graphic design, all right. And along with the two students whom you will meet shortly, we have the faculty advisor, Donna Grecian. Donna, how many years at William Allen?
This is my eighth year at William Allen. Mm-hmm.
Did you teach somewhere else before that?
No, before becoming a teacher 8 years ago, I was an industrial chemist. So I was a chemist for 20 years.
So you're teaching chemistry?
Yes.
At William Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And you are the faculty advisor for both of the clubs that we're going to talk about right now, the anti-bullying and also the PPL Engineering Explorers. Natalie, tell us a little bit about the anti-bullying club. I'll be frank with you that as an older person, I think back to my years in high school, believe it or not, it was the 1950s. We did not have anything like an anti-bullying club. Do you think bullying was going on?
Most likely.
Definitely, yes, but we just didn't have a spotlight on it. Yeah. So what do you do with the club?
Well, I'm the senior there. I'm one of the only seniors there. But we meet every Monday, and we just talk about ways to like end bullying. Obviously it's a really long process, but we also create a big space to let us talk about what we're feeling. Like if one of us is being bullied, we can go and talk to her, Miss Grecian, and she can help us out with that. And we always like share our opinions on anything, whether it's cyberbullying or physical bullying. You know.
Okay, you've mentioned two kinds of bullying.
Yeah.
Are there other kinds as well?
Yeah, there's three really like main divisions, which is of cyber, physical, and psychological bullying. But under those divisions, there's others like prejudicial and like sexual abuse, like bullying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's many types, but physical, psychological, and cyber are the top main, like, broader subdivisions.
Areas, right. And so you feel free to go to Ms. Grecian with problems that you're having, with thoughts, with feelings, whatever.
Yes.
How about in front of the whole group? Does anybody ever open up and say, this has happened to me?
Yeah, we open up a lot. I've made a lot of friends that I never would have made if I wasn't in that club, like Chelsea. Who's with us right now. I would never met her because obviously I'm a senior and she's a sophomore. But yeah, we always talk about anything, about life, about anything that's going on with us at home.
So some of the discussions are not specifically about bullying.
Yeah, sometimes we just talk to each other about anything that we're feeling. It's not always bullying because it's not always happening, but and not always reported either.
Exactly. Like, yeah. The reporting is a problem, isn't it? Because that very often if I see something in the newspaper or in the news, I hear about bullying, they will frequently say this is really underreported. Because you're ashamed or you feel guilty about being bullied?
I don't know if it's as much feeling guilty on the student's part as much as fear of retaliation. You know, the saying, people have snitches get stitches. I mean, kids are afraid to speak up, either as a bystander or as a kid getting bullied, because they're afraid that it's going to get worse, or they're going to get jumped or something like that. And that's just, that's horrible. I like to think that my classroom is a safe space.
Right.
So when we have our club meetings, and even when I don't have a club meeting, kids are coming in my room and visiting and chatting and things like that. So
you're open to that, and the students need that. Is there, how would you answer this question about boys bullying girls, boys on boys, girls on girls? How does that work out?
Boys and girls, it happens sometimes, but it's, I think to me, for what I've seen, it's kind of rare that boys and girls like bully each other. It's kind of more of like they want attention from the other person, you know, kind of like, I'm going to pick on you, but I actually kind of like you instead of being mean. It happens a lot. Boys on boys, it's a lot more physical bullying, I feel, because, like, especially at Allen, like, it's always like, I'm better than you or something. Like, it shouldn't be like that, but it's something.
Boys
that
are
happens.
Always trying to be the alpha dog, aren't
always,
they?
Always, yeah.
And
as
so
for girls,
immature.
Yeah, as for girls, there's mostly like gossip. Like, it's kind of like spreading rumors about each other, which is kind of like, it depends on who you are as a person, if you're going to take it to heart or you're going to be like, dismiss it, be like, that's not what it said, and you're going to approach the person and be like, hey, stop saying that, please. Or some people don't do anything, and they just stand back, and somebody else hears from it, and then they ask them. And
what I'm hearing is that boys are more physical with the bullying, and girls are more verbal with the bullying.
Right. There's also a bullying by exclusion.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be saying things to people. It could be excluding you from a group that you want to belong to. And that's also a form of bullying, and that tends to happen, and that falls under psychological.
Okay. But what kind of groups would be doing that?
Well, I mean, just groups of kids. There, you know, it's kind of, you know, when we were in school, we would have called them cliques.
Okay. Right. Not a sports team particularly.
No.
A club, but just those who get together and enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, because at our school, there's a lot of people like. This kind of, well, not really all the same, but a lot of the same people are in the same clubs. Like, there's basketball people that could be in the drama department. And, like sports, drama, technology, everything kind of mixes together because it's a very diverse school. So everybody has different likes, and at least we have different clubs to get into that.
And how is bullying handled at the school? What would you do if you are bullied?
You would contact an administrator or, like, a teacher. Like, you would go and talk to them about it, and they would contact an administrator if you don't feel comfortable. I really do suggest that you just go to somebody you trust that's an administrator or has some power and just tell them about it, and they'll try, because that's the key word, try and resolve it. Mm-hmm. But, that's it.
Alan has our code of conduct has a zero tolerance policy. So we are striving to follow through with that. But again, teachers are constantly vigilant. But sometimes things happen in the hallway where teachers aren't. We might be in the classroom and something's happening in the hallway. We have a lot of cameras around the school, so we can catch up on that as well. But everybody has to be on the lookout for everybody else. We're all trying to help each other is what we have to do.
Do we? Canaries all, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Canary Nation.
Canary Nation. I saw that just on the shirt here, one of our students.
That's our
in
slogan.
The studio.
Mm-hmm. Proud
That's
Canary Nation.
All right. And are there other anti-bullying initiatives at William Allen besides the club called Anti-Bullying?
Yes, there's every year. We're hoping that this year we also get the, what was it called?
No Place for
No,
Hate.
Yeah, No Place for Hate, which was meant for 2 years now or three.
I think we've gotten the third one. We haven't heard yet.
Yeah.
We put in for the third year.
Hopefully we're getting the
What's
third
the
year.
What's the name again?
Anti-Defamation League
has
a No Place for Hate designation that they award different schools. And you have to do a certain number of activities that will that are against bullying and against hate and hate crimes and things like that. So you do a certain number of activities, and then they judge them and say, okay, you are a new place for hate school. We get a banner that says it for the year, and we've had that. Yeah. Definitely the past 2 years. We're looking at the third, hopefully, for last year. Yeah. We have not heard yet.
Mm-hmm. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What else do we have? You want to talk more about
CIS,
that?
CIS, yeah. I'm part of a group that's called CIS. It's Communities in School. And we've had leadership conferences to help build up, like, leaders in our school. Like, we'll take people that in the classroom, teachers think that they step up or are too shy, but we're trying to bring them out of their shell so that they can take charge and be like, okay, if they see bullying out someplace, they're like, we need to report this and like help out. Yeah, so I've been part of that.
Other clubs we have a Gay Straight Alliance group.
Yes.
And we also have what we call SAD, which is Students Against Destructive Decisions. And the Drama Club also, while Drama Club doesn't sound like it fits, they actually put on skits about bullying and making the right choices for our elementary and middle school kids. So they go visit those schools and they put on skits. So the Drama Club fits in as well. So
right. And the topic would be very often bullying.
Yes.
Right.
And what to do about it.
Right. They might be demonstrating some kind of bullying behavior and how to deal with it.
Those are all interesting initiatives. My guests this evening for the first half hour of Lehigh Valley Discourse are Natalie Reyes from the Anti-Bullying Club, and in just a moment we're going to hear from Chelsea Zukal of the PPL Engineering Explorers. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm John Pierce, your host. So glad to have you join us this evening. It's time for us to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
It's High Schoolers on the Move this evening for our first half hour of Lehigh Valley Discourse. Stay tuned for the second half hour, which will be Teen Scientists. And your host will be Rhea Malhotra. We have just spoken with Natalie Reyes, who is a senior at William Allen High School. She is in the Anti-Bullying Club. And the advisor for that club is Donna Grecian, who is here with us also. Donna also is the faculty advisor for PPL Engineering Explorers. And the student representing that group is Chelsea Zukal. And Chelsea, what year are you at William Allen?
I'm a sophomore. Okay.
Do you have brothers or sisters who have already been to William Allen?
Actually, all four of my brothers have gone there. I have my twin brother, and then all of my other brothers are like 10-plus years older, but they've all gone.
All right. So you and your twin brother are the babies of the family?
Yeah.
Do you get picked on? Do you get bullied within the family?
No, not really.
Because we could get you to start an anti-bullying club in your family. That probably just comes naturally. Well, the club that we're interested in talking to you about now, Chelsea, is the PPL Engineering Explorers. Now, our listeners know about PPL. It's the electric company in town.
Mm-hmm.
What does that have to do with William Allen High School?
Here, I'll take that for you.
Yeah. Okay.
Explorer Post is a program actually sponsored by the Boy Scouts of America. And what they have is it's a program to get kids exposed to potential careers. So kind of a career cruising, learning about different careers so they can make some decisions as they're going through school. And PPL got involved. They're talking about an engineering group. So this group of kids that are in this club are interested primarily in careers in the STEM industry, the STEM areas, science, technology, engineering, and math. And what happens is when we have our club meetings, we several engineers from PPL are part of the program, and they come and they visit William Allen. Many times the groups go to the company.
Oh, that's interesting. To
learn about these things. But what happens is recognizing the transportation issues that many of our students have, the difficulties with getting around sometimes, PPL comes to us. So we meet at our school in my classroom after school once a month, and the kids are learning about different engineering careers.
All right. Well, Chelsea, what kinds of things do they talk to you about?
They pretty much talk to us about the different careers in STEM. And a lot of the activity-based things that we do are based on the different careers. So, like, the first session we had, we did building a roller coaster, and I believe that was mechanical engineering. And then our last meeting that we had, we built robotic arms, and that was for robotics.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Well, tell us a little, describe for our listeners the roller coaster. How large was that? Was it a little model?
It was kind of a little model. We were restricted to our resources, so they gave us one swimming pool tube, and we had all these little like paper clips, tape, all that stuff. And we had to have we had to make it go in a loop somehow. And that was kind of the whole base of the project.
Okay. So you have some engineers from PPL who go to the high school once a month. And then does this club meet every week?
It's this every second Wednesday of the month.
Oh, so it is monthly.
Yeah.
Okay. And would you say all the students are interested at least in exploring a career in that area?
Yeah, I do, because the kids that show up, they always look like they're having a good time, you know, and they come back. So it's not like they're being forced to go. They actually have an interest in the careers there.
Do you see a relationship between what you do in the Engineering Explorers Club with classes that you take at the high school?
Well, I haven't gotten to that point where I can take physics and those type of advanced classes, but I think eventually it will be better for us to take physics based on the projects that we do in there. It does help us. It allows us to understand some of the properties that go into the class.
That's an interesting point that I hadn't thought of, that participation in a club could spark an interest to take a certain class at William Allen High School.
Mm-hmm. I haven't thought about that either. Thank you.
Yeah, with me for anti-bullying club, I decided to hopefully, if the class runs, to take sociology. They have a DE class there, which is dual enrollment college classes. You take college credits, and it's about life and stuff like that. So they'll talk about bullying and how that affects society and those stuff like that. So yeah.
Chelsea, I asked about students who are in the club, which is the Engineering Explorers. Do you yourself have great interest in a career in the STEM area?
I do, yeah.
What would be your passion right now, would you say?
Biomedical engineering. That's what I've been looking to for like about a year now. And, you know, I do other science programs. So one of my projects this year is it's actually robotics. It's a robotic project about tank treads and all that stuff, which I'll be presenting in February. So it does help me.
Now, where will you be presenting that? Is it a competition of some sort?
Yeah, it's the Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Science. There's the regional competition is held late February. And if you place first, you get to go to Penn State in May, I believe. So it's worth it.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah. Is this something that William Allen participates in every year?
Yes, we have science. Several students. We had several students do very well last year, and they're all participating again this year. So they're all pretty excited about it.
Great. So, Chelsea, if you could sort of think ahead now, you're a sophomore mm-hmm. in high school, so you're not quite to the point of looking specifically at colleges to attend. But if you could see even beyond the college, do you have anything in your mind about what an ideal career would be for you? You said robotics.
Yeah, something within that field. Because I've always been the type of person who likes to do hands-on, but also helping people at the same time. So I feel like it would be a good fit for me.
All right. How does helping people come into what you're talking about with robotics?
Well, originally, my project was going to be about hand prosthetics, leg prosthetics, more advanced robotics, but that's like the main thing I wanted to do, just because I know I can be advanced in that, but still find a way to help people and do that all in one career.
That's terrific, yes. You love mechanical things and making things work and finding out how they work.
Yeah.
And then you can, if you're doing that in the medical field, well, terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a little bit of a boost for you, being able to participate in this club. Do you plan to participate in the Engineering Explorers your junior and senior years?
Definitely.
Have you thought about that?
Yeah.
Yes. And Ms. Grecian, again, is the faculty advisor for this club. Do you get to work chemistry into this club or no?
Oh, whenever I can. This is actually my first year as advisor for the club. Previous few years, it was the physics teacher who retired in June. So I took over the club for him, but I would pop over there after I was done with whatever I was doing that afternoon. I'd pop over and hang out with them. So I got to see some of the things they were doing. So, yeah, I'm going to try and push chemistry in there as much as I can, especially when we get to the chemical engineering part.
Yes, yeah. Like a true teacher, huh? She wants to do what her passion is, of course. So this is a group that meets monthly. And what interests me is that you have somebody coming from the outside, engineers from PPL.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, is it one engineer at a time who comes in?
No, it's usually the group changes monthly because I think it depends on which topic they're talking about. They make sure they bring their experts with them. I think there's a core group of four, five, or six or so. And then sometimes it's two or three come, and other times all of them come. So I think it depends on what the topic is, or maybe if it's because the kids then, after learning about a career, they do a hands-on project as a group. So maybe if it's a very intensive type of hands-on project, maybe they'll bring everybody. So we have all hands on deck to help out and all. But
and talk to us about the numbers of students in the group, because that's interesting.
Yeah, we had a big recruitment this year because we were down to about six members last year. And all but two graduated. And we had a big recruitment because we really thought it was a valuable program and we wanted to keep it going. But it's difficult to justify keeping something like that going when you're involving a corporate entity.
Exactly.
For six kids. So we had a big recruitment at the beginning of the school year. And our last meeting, we had 24 kids there. So we filled up my classroom. That's kind of a capacity because too many more kids and you know, you're bumping into each other when you're doing the group projects.
Huge difference in numbers.
Yeah, we're really happy, and I think the kids are having a ball with it.
Yeah.
Well, and hats off to PPL because they are releasing some of their personnel to go to William Allen High School for a couple of hours, and then they cannot be doing their work that normally they would be back at PPL.
And the engineers that they send, they're younger engineers. I mean, I would call them kids. At my age, I'd call them kids. But they've recently graduated, or maybe within the past 5 years or so. So they have a really good rapport with the kids, and they can point out, here's some things that I did when I was in school, and they're building relationships that way too. Some of these kids may end up working as engineers at PPL someday.
Correct. Do you have other faculty coming into either of these clubs, the anti-bullying or the engineering? Or are you the only faculty member?
Well, I'm the one who's there primarily, but there are the new physics teacher we have. He comes into the PPL every so often. In fact, I had a meeting last month and couldn't attend, so he covered for me, so he was there. And then we have another teacher who pops into anti-bullying frequently. And just a visit because some of us there, it's a big family, but some of the kids are all in the same clubs and they all know each other. So everybody's popping in. Oh, hi, how you doing? And
Yeah, it's a good feel.
Right? Am I?
Yeah. It does feel like a big family.
Mm-hmm. Right. And these clubs take place after class hours.
Yes.
So typically 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And go for an hour?
We start around 3 o'clock, and depending on the PPL club goes closer to 5 because we have the little bit of learning about the career, and then they spend about, 45 minutes or so on a group activity. And then they get pizza. So I always tell kids, you have to do the activity before you get the pizza. And then anti-bullying, we could be there depending on what's happening and who we're talking with and what we're talking about. We could be there till just as late. Sometimes we have been.
Do you have to be mindful of school buses at 4 or 5 in the afternoon that might or might not be available?
No, because we don't have any buses at Allen.
Yeah, no, we don't.
You don't have any buses?
No, most of the kids that get bused are the special ed kids because they get picked up at home. Allen is very, very, I'm going to say pedestrian, because a lot of the kids walk.
Yes.
Or they'll take public transportation. Right. It's a very walking school.
Right. So this is not true for the entire Allentown School District, but it is for William Allen not to have the buses.
Yeah.
Right. I can't really say for sure. I just know Allen's situation.
Oh. No, yeah. We don't have buses. I've never
Did you
had
have buses,
buses.
In middle school?
No.
Mm-hmm. No. Interesting. Well, I learned something today. Thank you. I'm astounded because nowadays we do talk so much about busing, and you see these buses all over the place from different school districts.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was unaware of that.
I feel like it's mostly public schooling that doesn't have buses, because when I was in a charter school, I was in Executive Education Academy Charter School, they had buses. Like, we had buses because the school was so far away. So they had to bring buses so we could go. Some people did come, like the parents would drop them off and they would pick them up. But I feel like, like charter schools and private schools are more like tend to have buses instead of public schools.
Yeah, or if it's just a big district, like I know Parkland, they have buses all the time.
Right.
So I think it depends on the school district's area and how far each school is from another.
Distances, that's right. Well, believe it or not, our time is up for this very first special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. We're talking with high schoolers Natalie Reyes and Chelsea Zuckel. And thanks so much for coming over. And your faculty advisor, Donna Grecian, who I take it is a very popular person over at the school because she's attracting all these students into the clubs. So this was a highlight on William Allen High School in Allentown. I'm John Pierce. Neil Heaver is doing our engineering for us. He's our operations director here. Stay tuned now for Rhea Malhotra and Teen Scientists.
Good evening. Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY 88.1 FM. You can also find us on WDIY.org for more Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Rhea Malhotra, your host this evening, and doing our audio engineering is Seamus McGrogan. This is the first edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse's new monthly segment, The Teen Scientist, where we bring you groundbreaking innovation in the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics disciplines entirely from a teenage perspective. We also highlight excellence in high school independent research and technological development. I myself am a junior, and in fact, on air with me today, we have Isha Mohapatra, a senior from Moravian Academy in Bethlehem. Hi, Isha. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So, for our listeners, can you tell us how old are you?
I'm currently 18 years old.
And are you excited to be with us today?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, perfect. So, after talking to Isha about her own research in engineering and starting a business plan based on her studies for the past years, we'll also go into discussing some of the modern issues facing science today. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get right into it. So can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
So as Rhea mentioned, my name is Isha Mohapatra, and I'm currently a senior at Moravian Academy. And over the last 5 years, I've been conducting research on bricks and how to make them more insulating so that if you built a house or a building with these bricks, they would conserve almost 30 to 40% of the heat energy that's normally lost through the walls of these houses or buildings. And that would not only save on heating bills, but it would also help to conserve the heat energy that's normally lost and conserve our fossil fuels ultimately. So in addition to my brick project that I've been doing for the past 5 years, I also like to get very involved in school. One of the other big things I do is an organization called DECA, and that's like kind of the business side of my school life, my academic life.
That's really interesting. So how long have you been working on this project?
So as I said, I've been working on it for about 5 years now. I started in seventh grade with the Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Science, just doing small science fair projects. And from there, I took this minuscule little project that I had and just kept going with it. And I just grew it over the last 5 years until, you know, my senior year, where I'm still working on it.
So how old were you in seventh grade?
I was about 12 years old.
12 years old, and now you're 18. That's really impressive. So how do you think you've stuck with it this long?
So when I was in seventh grade, I did actually come up with a way to make these bricks more insulating. But what ended up happening was that as I made them more insulating, because I would essentially create pores inside of the bricks using like paper pulp, I would literally take recycled newspaper and then I would crush it up using water and like grind it up. And then I would put them into the bricks, and then the paper inside would burn away and leave pores. But when I created these pores inside of the bricks would be too weak. And so after that, one of the challenges that I had over the next couple of years was making these bricks stronger as well as more insulating. And so that's kind of how it kept growing and growing and growing.
So Isha, can you tell me a little bit about the impact of what you're doing right now?
Right. So just for background information, about 41.5% of the average heat energy used inside of the regular American household goes towards heating, or the average energy used inside of a household goes towards heating and cooling. And so the issue with this is that that is a lot of energy going towards one thing. And so what these bricks kind of do is because they're about 30 to 40% more insulating than the average brick, if a house or a building was built with these bricks, they would save a lot of that heat energy that's normally lost through the walls. And not only would that cut down heating bills, but it would also conserve a lot of fossil fuels.
Definitely. So it says here that in 2016, 11% of greenhouse gas emissions were attributed to commercial and residential industry, right? This is according to the Environmental Protection Agency, and projections for 2019 may be even higher. So how does your brick project regarding conservation of energy pertain to this?
Right. So because this does conserve a lot of, I'd say, fossil fuel emissions, this would not only, at least if it could be used across the United States and even the world, if this brick material or these bricks, which bricks are also cheaply made, so they can be used in developing countries as well. If these bricks could be used, say, in these households and in these large buildings such as hospitals and schools and colleges, it could save just a lot of fossil fuels that are being burnt, and the remnants of the burning is also going into the atmosphere. And that is what also causes a lot of these emissions and causes the pollutants to really affect our environment.
Definitely. So your enhanced bricks are really alleviating the environmental toll of housing and the construction
right.
industry altogether.
For sure. Or at least they can if they're used in the future for building or construction.
Along with other benefits of your bricks versus the standard brick, is there a financial difference in the manufacturing cost of your bricks?
Right. So currently, I wouldn't say there's too much of a difference in the financial cost of these bricks, because additives such as like sawdust and limestone only make up about 0.5 cents extra out of the approximately 9 cents per brick. And so when you mix together material costs and production costs and labor costs, each brick, I'd say, would be around approximately 20 cents per brick. And it could honestly be a lot less than that, because this is only 20 cents for the bricks that I'm making at my house. So I'm not really buying my materials like clay and sand in bulk yet. But once you start buying those in bulk, then
on a larger scale, the price would definitely decrease.
Yeah, so the price definitely decreases. So I wouldn't, it's not too different from the average brick.
So it's not necessarily financially advantageous. It's approximately the same, you're saying?
Yeah, to make the bricks. Of course, if you wanted to sell the bricks, if you want to sell them at a slightly higher price, you could do that. But
from a business standpoint.
From a business standpoint. But This is also to help the environment. And so I think it's better to have a brick product that costs the same as a regular brick to make so that it can be, you know, actually used in construction and just as effective. So I don't want the cost to be an issue in their use.
So definitely your selling point per se for these bricks is their installation and their environmental impact.
For sure. Yeah.
You're listening to Teen Scientist on Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Rhea Malhotra, your host. On air with me today, we have Isha Mohapatra, a senior from Moravian Academy in Bethlehem. So what are like some of the variables that you specifically focused on in your methodology?
So one of the things that I varied, like I said, was the concentration of the paper pulp, which ultimately turned into sawdust, which I started using sawdust inside of the bricks because it's like it's much finer and, you know, it creates much smaller pores inside of the bricks. But essentially, it was a burnable material that I had to put inside of the bricks to make them more insulating. And then another thing that I started varying was a more reinforcing material that I would put inside of the bricks to also make them stronger. Then over the years, I started also varying the clay to sand ratio inside of the bricks because the bricks were primarily made of clay and sand. I would vary water.
So what were some other materials that you put in the bricks along with clay and sand, like you said?
Right. So along with clay and sand, some of the materials that I would use inside of the bricks was essentially I would use sawdust so that the sawdust would burn away and create the pores. But then I would also put in limestone powder. I tested fiberglass. I even tested carbon fiber at one point, but we all know carbon fiber is way too expensive to actually use in construction. But I did test carbon fiber to see whether that would offset the weakening aspect of putting a burnable material inside of a brick. I tried cotton fiber once upon a time, and that was so to see if it would like burn away and create pores as well. And so there's just a lot of materials that I've put inside of these bricks.
So you're saying that each of these materials gives the bricks a different property? So it's like a trade-off almost between like financially advantageous to the strength of the brick.
Right. So I essentially have two categories of materials. One is burnable materials and one is reinforcing non-burnable materials. And so the burnable materials would be the materials that I put inside the bricks to create the pores inside of the bricks. And these pores, like I said before, would be created from that burnable material burning away during the firing process. And then I would put in these reinforcing non-burnable materials inside of the bricks to offset the pore creation that happened in the bricks. And so those were like the two different types of things that I would put in, one to create insulating property and one to strengthen the brick.
So do you think that there could be perhaps a customizable aspect to these bricks? So depending on the need of, per se, a construction firm that you could gear the bricks towards their needs?
I wouldn't say customizable, but I definitely think that you can play around with kind of how insulating you want the bricks to be. And how you would do that essentially is based on how much burnable material you put inside. So if your brick is like 10% sawdust, then it's going to have a much greater insulating property than a brick with, say, 5% sawdust or even 1% sawdust. And so I guess it's customizable in that aspect. But I think the main goal of the project was essentially to get it as insulating as possible while still keeping these bricks strong enough to be used in construction, because that was kind of the main issue I was encountering throughout the process of the last 5 years.
So I don't think many 12-year-olds I know are really interested in the construction of bricks. Why did you get involved in this?
So this is a question that I get asked very often, especially at science fairs, because bricks are essentially kind of a boring topic, so to say. But it did become interesting for me, especially back in like 7th grade. Essentially what was happening is at our school we have, like I said before, Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Science, PJAS, and I wanted to be a part of it. So I was on this website, it's called like sciencebuddies.com or something like that, and I was just scrolling through the website looking for like a science fair project to do. And so I came across one project, which was, it was about essentially testing different types of insulation. But then when I saw that, I immediately thought, you know what, I can just look this up online and I can easily look up which insulating material is essentially more insulating. So instead, I was like, maybe I can create my own type of insulation, like improve on something. And so I actually did, I talked it over with some other people, some other adults, like my science teachers, my parents. And then ultimately, I came to the conclusion that because I really liked art at the time and I did like pottery, at the time, I came with to the conclusion that bricks would be relatively easier for me to make at the time. Obviously, that's not true because it ended up being that each brick would take almost like 45 minutes to make with the methodology I had back then in seventh grade. But that's kind of how I came to start testing bricks. It's because I had a mm-hmm. interest in science.
So you've definitely reformed your method throughout the years and mm-hmm. definitely your approach to your whole experimentation process. So how do you think over time your project has really developed, aside from the fact that you're changing the material? Have you been more efficient in making these bricks?
Definitely, for sure. I remember, okay, back in seventh grade, I would make these bricks full size as if, you know, you're making bricks for actual construction. Like they would, I used to use like checkbook boxes. I don't know if many people know what those are, but they're very big boxes. And I used to put like the mold in the brick material inside of that and make full-sized bricks. But then after a year, actually, I got these new types of molds from Lehigh University where I was actually testing for the crushing strength the next year after my first year of doing this brick project. And they gave me these little 5-centimeter by 5-centimeter molds. And so they kind of took my bricks and made them into smaller sample sizes. So they were like cubes that I could test instead. And that made everything more efficient.
So do you think anyone at home could just make their own bricks? Is it a simple process by any standards?
I definitely think it's a simple process now, but I know that when I was trying to create them in the beginning, I had to kind of adjust a lot of steps so that the bricks could come out of the molds or like mm-hmm. fit into the molds perfectly. So there's a lot of like these small little steps that goes into my project just to make the bricks. But I definitely think that it's something that you can make at home.
It's definitely a trial and error process.
Yeah, it was definitely a huge trial and error process.
Was there any point at which you thought you would give up or you got too frustrated or a point that you were like, oh, I need a new project?
Yeah, for sure. I think, seventh grade is when I actually first, I came up with these insulating bricks right off the bat the first year. It worked out. But then after that, it was about a 3, 4, even 5 year process trying to optimize these bricks and make them strong enough to actually be used for construction. Because every time I put another material in with the sawdust, somehow it wouldn't work well together and the bricks would still be weak. And so only last year did I finally optimize these bricks and create a brick that's both insulating and 2 times stronger than the average brick. And so that was kind of a big moment. And I know definitely in those last 3, 4 years, I wanted to give up so many times because imagine I was like just starting out high school. You know, I was like, oh, my goodness, I might need to get another project because I need to, you know, do something where I actually can, or I just wanted to move on because I wanted to just kind of start this new like high school project or something like that. But
most people kind of progress through projects like each year they pick a new topic and you've really stuck with it, which is
I ended up sticking with it.
Definitely inspiring because I don't know if I could stick with same bricks for 5 years, but well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm Rhea Malhotra, your host, and this is Isha Mohapatra. You're listening to Teen Scientist on Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Hi, welcome back to the Teen Scientist on Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Rhea Malhotra once again, and I'm here with Isha Mohapatra, a senior from Moravian Academy. We've been talking about her research project regarding the enhancement of insulation in bricks. And before we were kind of talking about the impacts of what you do. So let's start back up again. So there is a lot of direct impact specifically in the construction industry, making your research actually a very useful study with immediate applications, but do you think that considering the vast existence of architectural structures today, it would be hard to transition from traditional bricks to your enhanced version?
So I definitely do believe that this is one of the challenges that would be faced in this industry. But then again, the brick industry as a whole produces about $9 billion in revenue annually. It has an annual growth rate projected to increase 8.8% annually through 2020. And because of this, I mean, we can see that there are still bricks being sold, and then it's a huge market that is essentially growing. And so these bricks that I'm creating right now can cater to this vast market growth. And we're always building schools. We're always building new houses. You know, as buildings get old, they need to be torn down, essentially. And these bricks can come in and be used in that construction. So I think there definitely is room to actually use these bricks in construction.
There's always construction going on and
right,
development.
Right,
exactly. So you think your idea would be readily adopted?
Right. Maybe not for older buildings, but definitely for newer housing and construction.
And you definitely do have the incentive, like you've said, about insulation and energy savings. It is beneficial in the long run.
Right. Yeah.
So the GDP of the construction industry in the United States has increased by $40 billion since 2015. How do you think this economic and technological boom will balance out with the conservation movement and attempts at reducing non-renewable resource consumption? So how does the economic aspect balance out with the environmental protection aspect?
Essentially, what I'm thinking is that because environmental protection is becoming such a huge movement in our society today, I mean, we need to protect our environment in order for our Earth to essentially survive and be livable in the future. So I do essentially believe that this is going to become one of the main kind of driving forces behind any kind of products being sold. I mean, if a company, even a construction company, which would be kind of like the customer of my, if I created a brick company, a construction company would be my customer. If they even said, oh, we use sustainable insulating bricks that help the environment, I think that would be a driving force behind, you know, actually people using that construction company to build their schools or do any kind of construction.
But do you think that the private sector necessarily prioritizes the environment versus their own financial gains?
I think that it's really becoming intertwined nowadays. I mean, in the past, I think we can definitely say that the private sector doesn't necessarily, that doesn't, energy conservation or I guess wasn't one of their priorities once upon a time. But nowadays, I think that if businesses or companies want to really reach out to their customers and reach out to the general population, they also have to keep in mind that environmental factors do affect. And I think nowadays it has become a selling point for many companies in the private sector to say that they use renewable energy or technology that, you know, doesn't affect the environment as much as technology in the past. It's kind of becoming intertwined. It's like a selling point.
Definitely. So do you think with this change in technological developments, it's possible that perhaps there will be no construction with bricks in the future, in the very distant future?
Right.
A possibility?
I think definitely that's a possibility. There's probably going to be some new construction material that comes along many years down the road. I definitely do think bricks kind of have lasted, or they have weathered the test of time. And so, I mean, bricks have been around for ages and ages, and they've kind of been made differently as we progress forward. And these bricks are kind of like the new bricks of society. They're kind of like a new construction material, essentially. You know, they're bricks that are more insulating. So I'd say it's like a technological advancement in construction.
Definitely. And one good thing about if you do take this to the market is that there will always be buildings. Like, your market will never die. You need the construction industry for sure. You're listening to Teen Scientist on Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Rhea Malhotra, your host. On air with me today, we have Isha Mohapatra, a senior from Moravian Academy in Bethlehem. So as we've been talking, it's obvious that you are really experienced and you know a lot about what you do. How did you get started? So you said you initiated this project in seventh grade, right?
Yeah.
Did your parents force you, or was it teachers? Like, how did the spark to do science fair and pursue research, how did that start?
I think that I always had an interest in science when I was younger, and we never had any kind of opportunity in school to actually do any kind of research. We kind of just did science labs when we were younger, and I always really enjoyed those. So when the opportunity came along in seventh grade to do PJAS, I just kind of jumped in and decided to do it. There wasn't much thinking for me to do. I didn't really bounce around the idea too much.
And once you kind of tried it, it stuck.
Yeah, it just stuck. And I always was very involved, and so I just liked being involved too. I think that was a big part of it.
How do you suggest that younger students like you get involved in science?
I definitely think that it's all about looking around you and finding a problem that you're passionate about. And there's always problems, you know, in society that we can solve. And so I think that's how
people can get involved.
Yeah,
this is definitely not the ideal world yet. So there's a lot of progress to be made.
And, you know, and I don't think it will ever be the ideal world. It's just about us making it better and better and better as we move along.
And that's the fundamental goal of science, really, is to make these enhancements in whatever field it may be.
Yeah.
But why is it especially important that we get kids involved in science at a younger age?
I think when you get kids involved in science at a younger age, you not only kind of foster their learning outside of the academic environment, which would be school, but you also kind of exercise these minds from a young age so that when they are even college age or even in high school, they can already be making huge changes. Because, I mean, in the past, we always think, you know, adults are the ones who make society better. But I think getting kids involved in science at a young age kind of propels that confidence forward that, you know, anybody at any age can make a difference.
Definitely. Let's take a look back at your business plan proposal. So, for the listeners that are unaware, Isha has actually taken her brick project and developed a business plan out of it. So, can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, essentially, I created this into a business plan because I was essentially creating a brand new product. And I think that was a really fun part of the project, essentially looking at the business side of the whole thing. Essentially, who would my customers be? What problems was I addressing? Key selling channels, that kind of thing.
It definitely made you think about your project from a new perspective.
Yeah, from a more money standpoint. Like, how would I actually sell this product? How would I create a company around it?
Yeah, definitely blending the worlds of technology and business.
Yeah, kind of understanding the economic side of it, understanding the market, because I could be creating a new brick product, but it could have been a declining industry, and then that wouldn't really...
There would really be no point.
Yeah, there would be no effect.
So. It's really interesting that you did go about doing your research this way, because there are many scientific endeavors that are solely for academia. Mm-hmm. Like only for the aspect of pure science, just to advance current research. But this actually does have a lot of impact in the real world.
Right.
What are some of your long-term aspirations, future plans?
So right now, I'm trying something new. I'm essentially building walls out of these bricks. So
taking it really large scale.
Yeah. They're not huge walls. They're very small, but I'm essentially trying to test how much heat energy or how much heat actually goes through the walls. And so that's kind of what I'm doing right now. I do have the optimized product, but I have a couple different versions of the optimized brick. So with different measurements of sawdust and whatever that I put into the bricks. And so now that's what I'm testing right now. And then hopefully I also have recently applied for a provisional patent. So I have that on the brick now. And then hopefully I can advance this and, you know, someday maybe I could even sell this brick product.
Eventually take it to market.
Yeah, for sure.
So Isha, you're a senior right now. Do you have any plans for college next year? Do you know what school you're going to?
So I recently got into Carnegie Mellon University, early decision. So I was really excited about that. And I will be attending the Tepper School of Business there as an undergrad. One of the reasons that I essentially really liked that school specifically was because it's a very technical school. And then I would be going into the business school as well. So I can combine, you know, the engineering and business aspect of my life that I've been working with over the past 5 years. And so I get to really explore that side. And they have a lot of entrepreneurship programs and opportunities there where I can potentially get a full patent on the brick and also possibly create it into an actual company or somehow create these bricks and put them into the market. And so that's one of my future plans, my big future plan.
It really gives you the opportunity to combine science and real world experiences in business.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the things that I really want to do because I do have a huge interest in business.
So after 5 years of working on this project, almost it's been half a decade, literally, what have you learned overall from research and science, and how has it changed your life?
So I'd say with research and science, I think that what I've learned kind of came through all the science fairs and attending with all my different, all my friends, all the young scientists like in the area. And I think what I've learned mostly is that you can literally create anything at a young age, and you can definitely improve the world at a young age. I mean, you know, many times, like I said before, as young people, we do not think that we can do that much. And I think that's kind of how I've changed. It's my mindset that's changed, that you can do anything at any age. You don't have to wait until college or after college.
Yeah, and I think from talking to you, it seems as if you've really picked up a resilience from the trial and error process of working through all the small problems along the way that come with enhancing a protocol or improving development.
Right. I think that's actually one of the biggest things, now that you mention it, that through actually working on this project, I think one of the other things I've learned just within me is the resilience, I'd say. Going through the entire process and failing year after, not failing, but like essentially
hitting obstacles along the way.
Yeah, hitting obstacles year after year.
Failing is a negative word.
Yeah,
that's fine.
We're not going to say failing, but it's kind of tested my barriers and how far I'm willing to push this project and how much I'm willing to work on it. And it's kind of instilled in me this resilience, this grit to actually get to the end point, like you said. And now, you know, that resilience is still there, and I still want to essentially get to the end point.
Well, I think it definitely does take hitting those impediments along the way to make progress.
And I've learned to apply that general aspect to the rest of my goals, whether it's any goals that I have in college in the future or just goals that I have with a club that I'm involved with in school. So
definitely.
It's been good, yeah.
Well, thank you for tuning in with us today on WDIY's Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thank you again to Seamus McGrogan, and especially thank you to Isha Mohapatra for being with us today. It was really nice to talk to you, Isha.
It was nice to talk to you, too.
We can't wait to see where science takes you in the future. I'm Rhea Malhotra, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM Radio. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on The Teen Scientist.